we often recommend temporary or trial accommodations. And for instance, telework is a good one to try on a trial basis because the employer's not locked into anything and it may not be effective. We talk to people all the time who telework is just not effective for them working from home, but for a lot of people it is. And that's a good way for an employee to show the employer, hey, I can work from home, I can control my environment, and I can be way more productive. So can we try this for a couple weeks or a month or 6 weeks or whatever, and let me show you how well that would work.
Migraine is a disease that is still widely misunderstood and dismissed, especially in the workplace. What if migraine inhibits your ability to work, but you are left with bills to pay and no health insurance? This year, more than ever, people with migraine, and especially women, are facing economic hardships caused by the pandemic. Well, we are delighted today to have Melanie Wetzel with Job Accommodation Network talk with us about navigating migraine and work, including options outside the traditional 9-to-5 job. Melanie, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Melanie, what are some of the challenges of managing a career with frequent and disabling migraine?
Probably the biggest issues are when migraine happens frequently, maybe without warning. So the employer has no warning that it's going to happen. The frequent absences from work can cause a problem for an employer. We talk to employers, individuals, parents, spouses, whoever calls really. But we'll talk about it, you know, is it possible to remove, are there any triggers or factors that cause migraine in the workplace that maybe can be reduced or eliminated to help the employee be able to be at work more often?
And I definitely want to get into that in more detail. You know, I am curious though, are these challenges the same or are they different for people with other health conditions, such as maybe like epilepsy or mental health issues or even brain injuries?
No, I think they're pretty much the same, particularly for epilepsy and some mental health conditions. When there are conditions that arise maybe quickly and without warning, and the employer has no notice, the employee may have no notice. And I think what's difficult too is it's their unseen disabilities. You know, if somebody's lost an arm and they come into work, I think pretty much people can kind of have an idea of what they might be able to do, what they might have difficulty with. But for someone with a migraine, if you don't have migraines, if you don't have someone in your family with migraine, then it might be more difficult for you to really think about, okay, what really are the issues? And I'm certainly not a doctor. I base what I'm saying here on my 13 years of experience here at Jan talking to people. And I do talk to doctors, talk to employers and the people with migraine themselves. And a lot of times they have no cause. I mean, there's no cause for it. There's nothing that they can eliminate or nothing that they can do that would help reduce that incidence. So it happens. Same as like with epilepsy, sometimes a seizure or panic attacks, that kind of thing. There's no, that people said, I didn't know it was going to happen. I had no idea it was coming. And so that's what can be a problem when it would happen frequently. And an employer can have the expectation that an employee is going to have consistent, reliable attendance. And so that would be the biggest thing, is that attendance issue. And then I think just not understanding.
I really appreciate that, because I feel like so many of us are plagued with always trying to figure out what the cause is and, you know, what's triggering our migraine. And we just feel so much guilt about that already. It's nice for you to say, you know, there's not always a cause, and for us to really, take that in and realize it's not our fault, you know, that it's an unpredictable disease. So, you know, knowing that, I guess, keeping that in mind, what type of work might be the best suited for those living with frequent or chronic migraine, maybe just kind of high level?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would want to say that we can't really tell people with migraine or really any kind of disability what might be the best job for them. But what we would say is to look at those things that are issues of concern. If it's lighting that is a big issue, then you're probably not going to want to work in a big office space, maybe a big retail location. You know, if you can work in a private office where you can control the lighting yourself, or a cubicle, sometimes they can do a lot of different things with the cubicle to reduce the lighting. if you can work from home. You know, a lot of jobs, people are able to work from home. If you're a waitress, that's probably not gonna work. You know, a hostess at a hotel, things like that, you can't work from home. So I think those are some things to think about. If there are fragrances that are an issue, you know, you wanna look at that. You don't wanna work in a florist or maybe a department store or a mall where there's a bathing products store. You know, those things might be a problem. So I think looking at that, and again, maybe working from home, noises. If there are noises that are an issue, there can be noise-canceling headsets that can work in the workplace. Now, we hear from some people that they can't tolerate something over their head like that. So there are earbuds, there are soundproofing panels, sound absorption panels that can be put up in offices or cubicles. Cubicles can have doors. So there are lots of different accommodation ideas that might help in an office or in a setting like that. But I think the biggest thing is to think about the biggest concerns, like if there are things that do cause the migraine, then look at not trying to get a job in one of those environments.
Those are great suggestions. So it does seem like there are two paths you can consider if you are struggling with a disabling condition like migraine. You can stay in your current job and try to make it work with some of those accommodations that you mentioned. Or, you know, if you can't get accommodations, you might have to find new work. Are there any other work scenarios that people could consider?
Yeah, I think so. I think starting a business, we get a lot of calls from people who are looking to start their own business, because when you work from home or when you have your own workspace that you can control, then you can probably manage your the triggers or the factors a little bit easier. If you can control the lighting, if you can control the sounds, if you can control when you take breaks, you know, those types of things, I think it's a lot easier for people.
Absolutely. And I even want to get into that a little bit more too. You know, going back to the accommodations that you could ask for in the workplace, you know, you mentioned several, actually. I wanted to make sure that we didn't leave any out that are typically asked for and when it's appropriate to ask for accommodations. Could you speak to that? I know you mentioned the headphones, even potentially soundproofing, which I loved. Are there anything else that you'd like to mention in terms of accommodations?
Sure. And let me just say that the employer can provide any accommodation that works for the employee until it causes a hardship. And that means that something would be too expensive or too disruptive or would change the nature of the business. Like, you couldn't turn out the lights in a whole big office, but being in a smaller space in your own office or a more private area, the lighting could be adjusted. So that would be something. I think the working from home is really important. You know, if you have a position where that is possible, and even if it's not something that's typically done, an employer can allow somebody with a disability to work from home, even if they don't allow other people to work from home, as long as the job can be done from home. And if sections or portions of it can't be done from home, then maybe the person could come into the office a small portion of their time, maybe on off hours too, when there aren't people there, when the lighting could be adjusted, or when the different things that might be of a concern wouldn't be around.
Yeah, that's great to think about. You know, one thing you mentioned a minute ago too, I wanted to bring up, because I've heard this question a bunch, and that is fragrance. You know, if you are working in the office and maybe you have been able to have some accommodations met, what if you just have a coworker nearby that loves perfume? You know, what's the right way to go about handling something like that? You know, if that's a real serious trigger for you.
Well, a lot of people want to handle that themselves, and they want to talk to the coworker and say, hey, you know, that really bothers me. Do you think you could not wear that? Sometimes that works and sometimes that does not. But I think disclosing, talking to the employer, a lot of employers implement fragrance-free policies. Here at Jan, we have a fragrance-free policy. It's wonderful because you're not smelling perfume, you're not smelling cleaning products, and it can be really helpful for people because, you know, there are people who wear all kind of layered products. So it's not just like they spray on cologne. It's deep. And so it can be really bothersome depending on, you know, where they sit. And an employer could take somebody, move their workstation possibly, if that's not possible to institute a fragrance-free policy. You know, that kind of gets into your personal choices. You know, I want to wear fragrance or I don't, but someone who can't tolerate that maybe could be moved to an area, not to seclude them, but move to an area where they are free from those fragrances.
And for somebody just starting off or thinking about their career, maybe they're in college and they already know migraine's a problem, are there certain fields or areas that you would kind of put at the top of the list that might be easier to manage with migraine?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think that what I think is really a good thing about that is a lot of people are able to tap into things that are really interests of theirs, furniture making, pet businesses, baking or cooking, agriculture, gardening, providing food, maybe to restaurants. If you have a degree in accounting, you love accounting and bookkeeping, that type of thing.
I think that's great advice for anyone, you know, and for somebody who really is considering working for themselves. Are there any other considerations or guidance that you would give them?
Yes, we do have at Jan, we have a self-employment team, entrepreneurship team, however you want to say that. We have information on our website. We also have a consultant here that works with people to get them the resources they need in the areas that they need. And I'm just going to have to look at my notes probably here for a minute just to, if you're receiving any type of benefits, you would want to have a benefits counselor to help you with that so that you don't lose any of those benefits in some of the things that you might be thinking of. And the employment, self-employment consultant that we have here at Jan can help with that, help point you in the right direction, get you resources for the area that you're in. Another thing is to identify a business counselor or a mentor, somebody who's already in that business or in that area who could kind of help guide you along with the experiences that they've had. Training, online training, there's a lot of free online training. Understanding how various programs might work in your area. And again, that would be something that the self-employment consultant here at Jan could help with.
It's great practical advice. So, you know, back to thinking about if you're currently employed, or maybe even if you are about to be in a position of being employed, I'm just curious about whether or not you should tell your employer about your migraine disease and why or why not might you do that?
Okay, well, you don't have to disclose any type of disability or medical condition until you need an accommodation. So if you don't want to do that, if you don't want your employer to know about that, you don't have to do that. If you do need accommodations, if you know that you're going to miss work, you might need lighting adjusted, things like that, different accommodations, then it's probably a good idea to go ahead and disclose that to your employer. And you want to wait before it becomes too much of an issue. And so a lot of people do not want to do that when they're being interviewed. They don't want to do that in the application process. And so they want to wait, and that's perfectly fine to wait. Now, we would just say, you know, if you take medication, you need, you need certain amount of rest, like a consistent sleep schedule that would be helpful to control your migraine, then you don't want to have a job working at night. So if the job is only a night job, that's probably not going to be the job for you. And you probably can't say, hey, I need a day job, because that may not be available. But for a lot of people, they can find out about the job, they know what the job entails, and they say, okay, I think I can do all of this, except I just may need accommodations in these areas. And so they can wait until after they're hired. Once their employer offers them a conditional offer of employment, then the employer can ask medical questions, and that's a good time to disclose too. Because if the employer determines at that point that they're not gonna hire them, that's a lot harder for the employer to say, well, it wasn't discrimination, unless there's really good reason that the person really wasn't going to work out in that position. You know, if you disclose a disability too early and you don't get the job, then you don't really know if it was because you disclosed the disability or you weren't the most qualified. And that's why a lot of people choose to wait. We would just say, don't wait too late until it becomes like a performance or a conduct issue, because that may be too late.
That's interesting. So even after the offer, it sounds like could be a good time to disclose. But if you haven't done that and you want to kind of wait and see how things go, but you notice that the lighter or whatever is an issue, are there any things you should think about before bringing that to your manager, before you do disclose that once you're already an employee?
I think you just want to be as honest and open with your employer as possible at that point. And you want to be able to state why that's a problem. You want to be able to talk about, this is how the lighting affects me. Here's some ideas on how I think would be helpful for me to cause me less incidences, to cause me to miss fewer days. And so I think when people know exactly how that environment's going to affect them and they can explain that fully to their employer, then the employer's more willing to look at that and they can make that connection. Oh, okay, I get that. And telework, if you're going to talk about telework, you need to just be able to explain to the employer why that would work, why that would be better. And we often recommend temporary or trial accommodations. And for instance, telework is a good one to try on a trial basis because the employer's not locked into anything and it may not be effective. We talk to people all the time who telework is just not effective for them working from home, but for a lot of people it is. And that's a good way for an employee to show the employer, hey, I can work from home, I can control my environment, and I can be way more productive. So can we try this for a couple weeks or a month or 6 weeks or whatever, and let me show you how well that would work.
I love the idea of a trial period. I think that could work for a number of accommodations as well. And I could see that, like you said, having maybe a little bit of a separate office space or a different spot that you're in. What if though you do disclose and, you know, even after, because I think it's also really important that there's that partnership there. I think you alluded to that at the beginning where you said, you know, a big problem is if there's absenteeism, you know, so if you're showing your employer, hey, if we work together on this, I'll be able to maybe be in work more often or work from home and keep up with my work easier. But what if you disclose and then you notice there's some kind of consequence? Like I recently heard an anecdote of someone who disclosed, the conversation went well, but then next thing she knows, she's getting a call from HR that she needs to go in and talk to HR, you know, and was just very concerned about what that meant. So what should you do if you think there are some consequences to those actions?
Well, we recommend that you put everything in writing to your employer for the first part. If you want to disclose in under the ADA, you're not required to disclose in writing. You can just talk about it. But we recommend that you put that in writing so that you have that as a more formal accommodation request. Plus, you have documentation of when I asked for an accommodation and what I asked for. And if there are negative consequences and things that seem like they could be harassment or something, it's good to document those. You know, if everything was fine until I disclosed, and then after this date's when all these different things started happening, it would show a pattern. And so we would say document all your communication with your employer, put that in writing, or if you're not doing it in writing, to document that you spoke to them. And just keep a written record of what has happened, because that would be important. And then, you know, there are remedies through your state human rights or civil rights agency. There's the EEOC, which is the federal enforcing agency of the ADA. And then through your employer as well, you might be able to file a complaint through your employer. You can always go up the chain of command if you feel that things weren't working the way that you expected them to or not according to the ADA.
So at what point would you recommend even that people consider getting a lawyer? Would that be potentially if you lost your job or when would that might be necessary?
Well, now we can't give legal advice, and I am certainly not qualified to do that. But you can file complaints with the state and with the EEOC without an attorney. I'm not saying that you need to do that, but you don't have to have an attorney to do that. And so there are also protection and advocacy agencies within each state, and that might be something that you could call and talk to somebody there as well. You know, hey, do you think I need an attorney? What do you think my next steps might be?
And what if you've lost your job, you know, due to COVID or during this time of COVID, but you really think that it might be related to your disability, almost as an excuse, you know, what would you say, what should somebody be thinking about if you think there was any kind of discrimination about your condition?
Okay. Well, you know, we can't really determine that at Jan, but you can contact your state civil rights agency. And then the EEOC is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That's the enforcing agency of the ADA. In many states, they work together. So you only have to call like your state agency first and find that out and talk to them. And then there's a dual filing. But if that's the case, then we would say you probably want to do that and see what help you can get. And we would say try to document as much as possible about what may have happened or what may have led up to that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think too, if you had, you know, the advice that you previously gave about documenting things, if you are beginning to see some problematic behaviors, hopefully you've been documenting as you've gone, you know, and you can see what patterns, like you said, have changed or not to help with that. So
exactly. And then you can also go up the chain of command at work. If you've lost your job, it's probably too late to do that. But, you know, if you see that coming, you can certainly go up the chain of command and just try to get some answers. Hey, here's what I see happening. Can you explain that to me? Because I'm not understanding. You know, I asked for an accommodation and then this is what happened. And I think trying to be open and honest and having that conversation.
You know, if, you know, there are, as you said, there are some benefits to working from home, and more people are working from home, and you can better control your environment. If you're someone with migraine, you can control the light and the smells and the sounds, and, you know, maybe even take a nap, you know, if you need to sort of take the edge off of a bad attack. So what are, you know, I guess I'm curious, can you receive financial help, or are there accommodations you can receive if you are working from home, similar to what you would ask for if you were in the office?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I think there are a lot of accommodations that still might be needed from home. If your only issue may have been the lighting and you can control the lighting at home, then you might not need that. But once you're at home, you might need a change in a supervisory method. Perhaps your supervisor was seated close to you and you talked and you got direction, you know, in a timely fashion. And when you're at home, it's not working that way. So you might need a different supervisory method. You may have difficulty with communication by email that you didn't have in the office because you could talk to people. We found that's a huge thing. You know, people who could walk around and talk to people, now they're having to make a concentrated effort to communicate. So there may be something related to that. It could be equipment. You know, do you need something that's going to help relieve neck or shoulder pressure or stress possibly that might cause migraine to be worse? So sure, absolutely. Do you need leave? Do you still need a flexible schedule? You could work from home, still need a flexible schedule, you know, depending on what your office hours are, what time you're supposed to be on your computer or whatever. So sure, absolutely. You can still have accommodations from home.
Great suggestions. Again, I think they might be things people aren't thinking about because you feel probably more comfortable at home, but you're not realizing that your posture isn't, you know, correct, or again, the lighting might be worse, just things you haven't even taken into consideration. So those are
right.
You kind of touched on this at the beginning of the interview, but I thought I'd come back to it. So when you are applying to jobs online, it is very common to see the question, do you have a disability on the application form? How should you handle this question?
Well, it's really unlawful for an employer to, and again, I'm not an attorney, but to ask any kind of question on an application, in the application process, in the interview process, that would kind of force somebody to disclose they have a disability. That's up to the employee to determine when they want to disclose that. And we hear that a lot, that it's, there's a you know, you have to indicate. And if it's on a computer screen, they say you can't ignore the question because it won't go to the next page unless you've answered something. So we would say, above all, you don't want to misrepresent the truth. So if you have a disability, you don't want to click no, because if later on down the line, if you need accommodations, the employer could come back to you and say, well, you said you didn't have a disability. You lied to us. You know, that could be some sort of policy infraction or something. So we would say, if you don't want to say yes, then answer, I don't want to answer. That should have no negative connotation. It should have no negative impact on the job search. The employer really cannot use information like that against people. And the only way it really should be asked is if it's an affirmative action where the employer's asking for that voluntary information, because they may be looking for targeted groups of people in those targeted areas of disability to hire them. They want to hire more people with mental health conditions. They want to hire more people with disabilities in certain areas. And so that would be an affirmative action. That's totally voluntary. And that information is totally confidential too.
And if you are looking for a new employer, for whatever reason, are there things to keep in mind or to look for to really find somebody that is friendly, you know, that would be a good person to partner with, a good organization to partner with? Are there things to look out for to know that you found that type of employer?
Well, I would say if you know somebody that works there, some There are employers who have a reputation of being more disability friendly. And I'll say that there are people with disabilities who determine I'm going to disclose in my interview. And if they don't like it and they don't hire me, that's fine, because I don't want to work for somebody who wouldn't be helpful to me later on. And so that may be one way to do it. I can't say that is the best way to do it. But I think it's important to look at, like I had said earlier, the environment, what type the job is, what that environment going to look like, what do you know about the employer? You know, can you go and look at the work site? Can you have an informational interview possibly and just find out more information? You know, you can do a lot of research on an employer online. There's a book called the Occupational Outlook Handbook, where you can look up different jobs to see what's required in those jobs. So you could look and see, well, this has some tasks in it I didn't realize, and it's going to be difficult or impossible for me to do those. Maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe I should look at some other type of job.
I didn't even know that existed. That's really helpful. And I guess my last question for you today is, migraine is a stigmatized disease. And I think especially in the workplace, you know, people are fearful to bring it up and fearful to disclose, fearful to talk about it. You know, what are things that we can do to raise awareness of migraine in the workplace? What might be a safe way to do it? Or if you feel that you are secure, you've talked to your employer, you know, what are some other things that you would recommend that we can do to really raise awareness of migraine in the workplace? We actually hear sometimes that employers don't think it's a problem, you know, and we know that it is. So what can we do?
Well, and I think it goes back to that being sort of a disability that's not seen, so they don't understand. If you don't have somebody that you know with that same condition, you might not think it's real. And even if you know somebody with that same condition, your employee might have a whole different set of issues that aren't the same as this person's. And so you're like, well, you know, I thought everybody was like this. And so I think just a disability awareness in general is good, that there are lots of disabilities people have. There are lots of medical conditions. And they say for autism, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism. But I think that goes for a lot of things, because you can have two people with learning disability and they have not totally different limitations, but their limitations are going to be different. And I think it's the same for any medical condition. And so I think for disability awareness training in general, to be more open to people with medical conditions, because 1 in 4 Americans has a mental health impairment. 1 in 4, that's a lot. And when you add all kinds of other disabilities in there, you have a very large workforce. That's a lot of people that are going to have a disability that you may not know about. And so I think being open to knowing that information, I think employees can request disability awareness training. It would be up to them to sort of provide that, unless they can talk to the employer and just have it in general. But we often suggest that for people who just want their employer and their coworkers to understand. You know, it's not that I'm calling off sick because I don't want to come to work. It's because I have migraine and I'm just not able to. The medication I take does not allow me to be able to work. And I'd like for you all to be able to understand that a little bit more, because once the employer knows there's a disability, they have to keep that confidential and they can't say anything to anybody else. And so the coworkers may be kind of wondering too, hey, what's going on? We don't have any information. It just looks like this person is absent a lot and we don't know why. And so sometimes helping your coworkers understand that better, they can be a lot more accepting. Now, we do have on our website is askjan.org, and we have an A to Z listing where we have all types of disabilities listed. We have a migraine page. We have accommodation ideas there. We have some situations and solutions. And then down at the bottom, we have some other related publications and also organizations. So that's a good place to look. You know, you can follow Jan and see their updates, see what their new publications are, maybe if there's been a blog written, that type of thing.
Great. Thank you. There sounds like there's so much resources, just so much information out there that could be at our fingertips to help with this. And I really liked what you said too about the fact that you can choose to share this in an empowering way with your fellow employees. And, you know, and I think that gives you some just empowerment over the situation in general. So I think that's a great way to end this, to talk about how you could really make a difference for others in the workplace as well that might be facing a different type of disability.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. We're so glad to have you today on the Migraine World Summit. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to do that. Happy to do that.